This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Stephanie Lecce. If you were to rewind 224 years, on this day, Congress would have just approved an act that, on its face, seemed fairly run-of-the-mill, but would invariably change America's coastlines, render shipping more reliable, and even alter the course of a major war. It was an act for the establishment and support of lighthouses, beacons, buoys, and public piers, and it marked the first commission of a federal lighthouse and funding for improved lighting along the new nation's coasts. 200 years later, Congress would approve another act, this one marking August 7th as National Lighthouse Day, which we celebrate today. Milwaukee received some of this federal funding to construct its first lighthouse in 1838 at the east end of what's now Wisconsin Avenue. It would be replaced by the North Point Lighthouse in 1855. We'll hear about that later in the program. Both of these local lighthouses boasted the latest in lighting technology in their lantern houses, the Fresnel lens. It was named for its creator, French physicist Augustin Fresnel, and it allowed for much brighter lights that could be seen for greater distances. How Fresnel came to revolutionize lighthouses around the world is documented in the new book, A Short Bright Flash, by author Teresa Levitt. She joins me now. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
I want to start by having you tell us a little bit about Augustin Fresnel.
Well, he was a French physicist. Actually, he was in some ways the most notable French physicist of the 19th century, but he's more known today because of these lighthouse lenses that he invented. People often think about lighthouses when they think about, you know, the engineering marvel of a lighthouse. They often think of, you know, these big stone towers going up. But in fact, it was the lenses inside of them that were really sort of the engineering masterpiece. And this came from work that he did in the early part of the 19th century.
We maybe take for granted today that our seas are well lit, but at Fresnel's time, what was the situation like for sailors and for companies trying to get their product from one area to another on ships?
Well, there weren't very many lighthouses. The number of lighthouses in the world could be counted in the dozens. And one of the reasons for this is because it was hard to actually have a lighthouse that was bright enough that it really worked very well. I mean, they would have, you know, sort of a lamp, and then they'd have mirrors behind it. And in the very best of situations, they claimed that these could be seen maybe like 12 miles away. But in reality, they usually weren't. It was more like, you know, sort of 5 or maybe 8 miles away. And this really wasn't quite bright enough to sort of fulfill the function of what we think of a lighthouse does, as, you know, sort of keeping ships off of, you know, dangerous reefs or shoals. A lot of the lighthouses that they had, for example, there was one at Cape Hatteras that they put up that all the sailing directives said, you know, sort of avoid this. Don't even try looking for it, because if you look for it, you're wind up to wind up on the shoals, which are about 10 miles out, before you're even able to see the light, which, you know, could only be seen for about 8 miles. So what he does is he comes up with a lens which makes it sort of much brighter. You can see it, you know, very easily 20 miles away, even, you know, it's only cut off by the curvature of the earth, so up to, you know, 40 miles. And this really makes lighthouses possible in you know, a sense that they hadn't been before. And you just see the wide proliferation of them. So, yeah, it really transformed the sense of how safe it was and the sort of expectation that you would get some warning around, you know, these dangerous hidden hazards.
Now, how exactly did Fresnel come to be responding to this need at that time? I mean, he was studying light as an engineer at that time, right?
Well, he had actually just come up with this sort of totally revolutionary way of thinking about light. People had generally thought of light as consisting of these little corpuscles, they were called, sort of these little particles, so working in the tradition of Isaac Newton. And so he had come up with a theory of light which proposed that it was actually a wave phenomena. So he had sort of completely reworked the theory of how light worked. And the way that he got to lighthouses, actually, he was in this sort of engineering corps, and he was off assigned to build roads in the, you know, far flung corners of France, and he really wanted to get to Paris, which was, you know, the heart of the scientific community. And so he's able, once he starts to get a little bit of renown, he's able to get a friend to appoint him to this lighthouse commission as a way to get to Paris. And then once he's there, he, you know, sort of takes this project of lighthouses and really sort of pours his heart into it.
Well, and as what happens in so many of these cases, Fresnel's genius came at just the right point in history. What was going on in France at that time that allowed him to be positioned in a place to have these revolutionary ideas heard?
he's sort of coming of age during a rather exciting moment in French history. So, you know, he's born during the moment of the Revolution, and then while he's working as an engineer, is during this sort of Napoleonic era, which is also when you get the formation of this lighthouse commission that originally he starts working on. So it's coming at, you know, sort of the perfect nexus of these moments. Napoleonic idea of a strong state involvement in, you know, sort of the glory of France, as well as a rise in the industrialization. It's sort of at this nascent moment of the Industrial Revolution, and also this sort of explosion in global trade as well, and sort of conjoined with the advent of steamships, you have a real push to try to make sea travel better.
I want to have you talk about the lens itself. Tell us a little bit about his design and his ingenuity in creating a completely new idea for how a lighthouse should be lit.
Sure. Well, the idea of the lighthouse, so you want to have the light be brighter. And if you just have a lamp sitting out, the light is going to go out in all directions, even, you know, sort of straight up where no one's going to see it. So the idea is that you wanted to take all of the light being radiated out and focus it into a single beam, which is going to be much brighter. I mean, it was a pretty straightforward thought that you would use a lens to do this. The trick was that when they had tried using lenses before, they had to be just these enormous things that had this huge thickness of glass. And so you had sort of two problems in this. One is that they were so thick that you would lose a lot of the light going through it. And also, you just sort of couldn't physically make lenses that big. So Fresnel's insight was that instead of having an enormous thick lens, you could sort of break it up into steps. So you would get these individual prisms, and they would be arranged such that the light would still be focused into one single beam. But instead of having something that was several feet thick, you could actually get it sort of much lighter and much thinner by this arrangement of up to, you know, sort of 1,000 different prisms all structured together.
But Fresnel quickly ran into some difficulties in trying to produce these lenses.
These lenses were very, very difficult to produce. You needed very high-quality glass, about the highest quality glass that could be made. In fact, this was a continual problem, is that when Fresnel first started making them, he went to one of the second-level glass makers, and they simply weren't able to make prisms, which were pure enough for a specification. So he had to get the higher-ups in the government involved to go to really the premier glass makers to be able to get the prisms in the first place. And then arranging them was no easy process either. They really needed a very precise and delicate arrangement. And as he tried to get bigger and bigger with the prisms, the, you know, sort of technical challenge of trying to make these enormous rings of glass to his very precise specifications was, you know, it was really at the limits of what they were physically able to do at the time.
What I think is really interesting in the book is how you talk about how even though once he debuted these lenses, you know, there was no question that these were far superior to the current lights that they had in lighthouses, yet Fresnel wasn't without his critics.
That's exactly it. I mean, if you were standing sort of side by side between the lens and the mirrors that you're using before, I mean, whenever they ran tests like this, it was very clear that the lenses were brighter. The trick was that they were also very expensive. So everywhere that you see this debate about whether or not to get the lenses, I mean, it's not always clear that people are willing to spend the money. In England, for example, there had been a long tradition of having these privately owned lighthouses, which were expected to try to, you know, sort of turn a profit, and they're not going to give, you know, sort of a huge outlay of money for this expensive lens because, you know, they want to make a profit out of it. In the United States, for example, they were very, very slow to adopt the lenses because the person in charge of it was actually not an engineer, but he was the auditor of the Treasury Department, so the bookkeeper of the Treasury Department. And so when he saw, you know, the comparative prices of the lenses versus the older technology, he thought it didn't make any sense to spend more money.
The book is called A Short Bright Flash, and I wonder if that doesn't also refer to Fresnel, who then died young from consumption. What happened to his workshop and the manufacture of these lenses after his death?
Well, that's precisely it. Actually, I'd originally titled it A Short Bright Flash, the Life and Lens of Augustin Fresnel, with the idea that his life was also very short and one would hope very bright. But yeah, he actually started showing the symptoms of tuberculosis really almost as soon as he started the lighthouse work. And so much of this, you know, sort of fevered work he's doing is, you know, with the realization that that his life is limited. So he's put in charge of, you know, this enormous project of completely relighting the French coast, and he's not actually able to see it through. But his younger brother, actually, Leonor, for now, had been working really by his side for many years by that point, and he takes over the project and really sees it through to completion.
How did the Industrial Revolution that was just getting into swing at that time impact the spread of this technology, of this lens technology?
You see this moment of a transition between the sort of old craft tradition. I mean, when they originally sort of start coming up with the prisms for these lenses, it's very much in this old craft tradition of something that is just meticulously hand-worked. But what you actually need once you get to the larger lenses is that in order to cast these arcs of prisms long enough, and you need something ultimately which is going to have a diameter of about 2 meters, so these really enormous arcs, you actually need to have a lathe, which is turning so fast that it needs to be turned by steam power. And so one of the things that you see, and this is really sort of after Augustin's death that Leonor begins to push for, is, you know, the introduction of steam engines comes to play a crucial role. And so you actually are able to see this moment of a transition from this old craft tradition to this full-scale industrialization.
You dedicate 2 chapters looking at the Americans' reluctance, if you will, as you mentioned before, to adopt these lenses, as well as what happened during the American Civil War. I wonder if we can't look at this example and say that even if the technology was there, sometimes the society needs a little bit more time to catch up with where the technology is at.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. And one of the interesting points, I mean, the lenses are clearly technologically superior. You get very little debate about that issue. And yet it's not a simple story. It's not an easy story of you know, sort of everybody automatically adopting them. You know, people are complex creatures, and the society we live in is complex. So you see a lot of things going into this, primarily debates about money is obviously a huge issue. But also one of the things that you see, one of the necessary things in the American experience is that, you know, you see it's really this first generation of sort of scientifically trained engineers that goes and really makes the cases for these lenses. So it's really the first generation of engineers being trained at West Point that are receiving a really sort of rigorous mathematical education that sort of argue for the introduction of the lens.
And what's interesting is, just like many other examples of technological advances, in times of war, men will use that technology against each other.
That's right. I mean, as soon as the Civil War breaks out, it really becomes you know, sort of part of the strategy. This is one of the first things, actually, that happens during the war. So Lincoln calls a blockade, and the South immediately shuts down all of the lights and sort of dismantles all of the lenses and you know, either brings them inland or, you know, hides them in nearby swamps. So the lenses themselves are sort of part of the tactics of war.
Now, when you go all around the country to some of these historic lighthouses, you will see examples of the Fresnel lenses.
You do, and you see them also in museums. I mean, they're often featured items in museums, as they should be, because they're extraordinary pieces. But it's always a real treat to see one of them in the lighthouses, and especially, you know, it's rather rare to see one which is still in operation. But when you do, it's pretty neat.
As the technology spread, who else began manufacturing these lenses?
Well, it stays in Paris for a long time. There are ultimately 3 manufacturers in Paris. England is the other place, which really gets motivated to have its own lens works. And actually, they try a few times. There are a couple of companies that go bankrupt trying, because, as I said, it's not at all an easy process. But you eventually do get a 4th manufacturer out of England, Chance Brothers. And then, very late in the game, the Germans ultimately make a few as well. I mean, there's this kind of an interesting case because the Germans had, there are really only three countries in Europe that had had long glass-making traditions, Germany, France, and England. And Germany hadn't been interested in making lighthouse lenses for a long time because the places where you made the glass were not the same places along the coast. So it's not until after you get the unification of Germany that that you actually get an interest in doing this. But ultimately, in the 1890s, Germany does get involved. And then the United States, they think about it in the 19th century, and they give up the project because it seems too hard. But they come back to it in the 20th century, and they actually never make any of the really big ones. But by this time, there's a company that has perfected this sort of cheap automatic process of making molded glass, and so they're able to make some of the smaller ones very cheaply.
What I think is really interesting, and you talk about this in the book, is the idea that these lenses became early examples of major public works because of their expense, and because, as you mentioned, private companies couldn't really afford to install these all across a country. That had to come from the government.
That's absolutely true. I think that economists actually love to use lighthouses as an example of, you know, sort of the, what is the best form of a public work? You know, what's a public good? It's something that really has to be bought by the government for the good of everybody. And this is something that really became true with the Fresnel lens for two reasons. One is that it was so expensive that these for-profit lighthouses weren't going to invest in it. And also, this is what made lighthouses go from being primarily harbor lights and something that you would charge ships dues to enter. They would, you know, sort of, you'd have light dues tacked onto their harbor dues when they entered a harbor. But they moved it to being these big seacoast lights, which were really for the benefit of everybody who passed by. So you could no longer charge someone money if they happened to be saved from the Diamond Shoals by seeing Hatteras Light. So they really do become sort of iconic of this idea of a public good, something which is really there to benefit everybody.
Well, Teresa Levitt, thank you so much for sharing A Short Bright Flash with us.
Thank you so much.
Teresa Levitt is the author of A Short Bright Flash, Augustin Fresnel and the Birth of the Modern Lighthouse. Levitt is an associate professor of history at the University of Mississippi who has received Fulbright and National Science Foundation awards. A fourth-order Fresnel lens lit Lake Michigan's shores in Milwaukee. We take a trip to the North Point Lighthouse from where it beamed next, when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.